Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
Okay, John, it's your turn. Tell us about the story that you picked.
My story this time is The Werewolf by Angela Carter. Go and visit grandmother, who has been sick. Take her the oat cakes I've baked for her on the hearthstone and a little pot of butter. The good child does as her mother bids. 5 miles trudge through the forest. Do not leave the path because of the bears, the wild boar, the starving wolves. Here, take your father's hunting knife. You know how to use it. The child had a scabby coat of sheepskin to keep out the cold. She knew the forest too well to fear it, but she must always be on her guard. When she heard that freezing howl of a wolf, she dropped her gifts, seized her knife, and turned on the beast. It was a huge one, with red eyes and running grizzled chops. Any but a mountaineer's child would have died of fright at the sight of it. It went for her throat, as wolves do, but she made a great swipe at it with her father's knife and slashed off its right forepaw. The wolf let out a gulp, almost a sob, when it saw what had happened to it. Wolves are less brave than they seem. It went lolloping off disconsolately between the trees, as well as it could on three legs, leaving a trail of blood behind it. The child wiped the blade of her knife clean on her apron, wrapped up the wolf's paw in the cloth in which her mother had packed the oat cakes, and went on towards her grandmother's house. Soon it came on to snow so thickly that the path and any footsteps, track or spoor that might have been upon it were obscured.
So, had you read this before, or you came across it and thought you'd like to share?
Yeah, no, I had never read it before. I just came across it when I was thinking about stories and thought, yeah, let's do this.
I'm trying to think if we've had like a little fairy tale like this, you know, like Little Red Riding Hood, Grandma.
I was going to say we did, but that was, we brought that one fairy tale kind of thing for the teen workshop, but
Oh,
that wasn't on the
yeah.
podcast.
Maybe we should visit that.
Yeah, I always look at like Grimm's, but they're just written in such a weird style that I'm never sure about bringing them to the podcast.
Well, I liked that this was, in that sense, a familiar premise, at least, right?
Yeah.
The idea that grandma lives in the woods and you would send your little girl after her alone, even knowing that there's big bad wolves. Well, I guess not big bad. Big bad is three little piggies.
You know, I was reading this and I had no preconceptions of what it was. Like, I was just like, oh, this is weird. And then it wasn't until the end of what I was reading that I realized this, it wasn't even a realization. It was just like a, wait, is this Red Riding Hood?
Yeah, and like the difference is, I guess that, I mean, it's in the title, it's the werewolf, which is
Yeah.
different, right? Like, I guess in Little Red Riding Hood, it's just a wolf that can talk. And here it's like a human that turns into one,
Yeah.
which is an interesting sort of, it could be like just the backstory of the wolf.
If you think about like fairy tales and folk tales especially, but how you have to assume that they've been changed by retelling over and over again. You can think of like one of these two versions being the original, right? Like the wolf that transforms into the grandma who is a werewolf versus the talking wolf who takes over for her. You know, like you can see one of them being the originator, like the other one being
Yeah.
kind of like the centuries later retelling.
Right. So by the end, though, we are meant to believe that the wolf is the grandmother and the grandmother's a
Yeah.
werewolf.
Grandma's a
And
werewolf.
maybe that's why she's been banished to sort of living in the woods by herself.
Yeah. Well, maybe until they stone her.
Yeah. So the story starts out with like almost like a summary of how in these times witches are discovered and treated. By treated, I mean treated by other people, not cured or something.
There's the witch's hospice.
Yeah, no, they're literally all just stoned.
Well, it's about the culture. It's like, this is what it's like for these people.
Right.
They live a hard,
Really cold.
harsh life, and they're brutal people. They're so brutal that this is what they do to witches. You know, they just kill them.
Yeah, it's like a brutal climate and existence, and it makes them like similarly tough, right?
Yeah. And then it moves to, here's an example. Consider Little Red Riding Hood, beset upon by a wolf on her way to grandma's house. She
Yeah.
dispatches it,
Like
then
quickly.
dispatches her grandma.
Yeah, then keeps going and then kills her grandma. And then the way it ends, it's like, now the child lived in her grandmother's house. She prospered. It's like, oh my God, is this supposed to be like a happy ending?
Yeah, she's suited to the environment, right? She's made it.
Well, what did you like about this story? I kind of enjoyed just kind of what we just hinted at, which is the fact that this is like a barren, hellscape of a, of a place to live. And it seems like a really like intense version of Red Riding Hood for that reason. Like you could see this like cinematically. But what did you enjoy?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I like that. And as a retelling, I mean, that was the thing that I was, like I said earlier, when I was like, oh, this is Little Red Riding Hood in a different way. I liked it as a kind of different take on that story. We've talked about in other episodes about retelling different stories. Like the Frog Prince story, we talked about like
Oh,
taking
yeah.
like a story trope and like doing it in a
Right.
weird different way. So just in that theme of like a new kind of new angle on a classic story.
Right.
I also like the way it was told. Like the section I read could have gone on for like 5 pages. You think of
Oh,
like to
yeah.
build a fire, the Jack London story to build a fire.
Yeah.
Like what she's dealing with in that moment could have been to build a fire, like that whole story. But it's just, all right, she's walking, it's cold, there's a wolf. She like cuts its thing off, it runs away. She cuts its paw off, it runs away. I guess I should be specific. But it's just told in a kind of like that same brutal kind of tone as the whole
Right.
thing. It's one of those tellings where the prose just help like really matches the
Yeah.
feeling.
Yeah, I mean, even going back to that last line I already read, now the child lived in her grandmother's house, she prospered. It's like, and she's doing great.
Yeah, it's a semicolon, right?
Yeah.
It could have easily been now the child lived in her grandmother's house and she prospered. It could be comma and, but the and feels like it's just too smooth. You know, it's got to be hard. It's got to have a hard edge there. So just break it up. Period, semicolon.
Yeah, it's like hard, but it's also it feels like in keeping with sort of like the way that these people might talk, you know, like what else is there to
Yeah.
say? She's doing great.
Short and direct.
Yeah, she prospered. Oh, no, she's fine.
Yeah.
You'd be like, isn't she traumatized? What?
Let's spend 2 hours to unpack your trauma.
Yeah, it very much seems like the story that they want to impart is that turns out it was the grandma and she took care of it. Not like what that must be like to deal with her, what it was like discovering that.
And Little Red Riding Hood is competent. She's powerful. She's got agency and wherewithal.
And apparently not at risk of being suspected as a witch,
Yeah.
which is interesting because it in theory runs in her blood.
It's her grandma.
It's her grandma and she killed her, so it's like she's a hero in some sense, but I mean, it's also like if she didn't kill her, what was gonna happen? It's like dog eat
Then they
dog.
would suspect her.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
You're harboring a werewolf.
Yeah, the child very well could also be a witch that like got away with it. And obviously we know that witches aren't real, and even in this story, like they're not like necessarily described as being real so much as like
Yeah.
everyone's suspected of it until what, like until it's confirmed and you can stone them. It seems like the reason she prospered is because she did something very early on in life that withdrew any kind of suspicion from her.
I mean, one of the like the first section where it's kind of setting up this scene, they talk about to these upland woodsmen, the devil is as real as you or I. More so, they have not seen us nor even know that we exist, but the devil they glimpse often in the graveyard. So she's kind of setting it up as a superstitious lot.
Yeah, they're superstitious, but it's also, I don't know, these aren't just people that hear bump in the night and are freaked out by it. They would also argue they have tons of proof, right?
Yeah, they believe it's
Yeah.
true. They've seen it, you know. They've found the witches. They know how to deal with it. It's real for them,
Yeah.
which is what that line says. It's like they feel like the devil is more real than, because they never heard of us.
You
They've
sure?
seen the devil. They've dealt with the devil. They know how to deal with the devil.
Yeah, which is interesting just because, like, these people, if there's anything more real to them than the devil, it would be just the realities of their environment, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, here's this season, and like, what's more at play in their daily lives than what the earth is doing?
The snow.
Yeah, I imagine like the hunting seasons, and even it's like take of the oat cakes and the little pot of butter. I mean, there's just not much, and they're doing decently. I mean, it's short, and there's not like a ton to say about it in that sense. But when I was reading about the story after the fact to just kind of see what else, it just talked a lot about women and whether or not they have the kind of agency that they might have in other societies, right? Like the way that they decide whether or not someone's a witch is to find their third nipple, which is so
Oh, yeah.
weird. And in the first one, they're just like, oh, they look for it and they always find it and then they kill her. there. And for the grandma, it says they knew the wart on the hand at once for a witch's nipple. It's like, oh my God. Any little bump or lump and you're a witch, which is
Yeah.
just wild.
That's how Red Riding Hood character recognized the hand as being her grandma. It's like she'd always seen the wart. She'd all must there's a whole kind of assumption there that she's like, oh, that's grandma's wart. I know grandma's wart. And
So
it's not until
gross.
like, oh, she's revealed to be a werewolf. It's like, well,
Oh, it all makes
obviously that's what the
sense.
wart was.
Yeah, which is just bizarre.
Think we call that confirmation bias or something like that.
Yes. So of course, like anyone that you want to be a witch, you could figure out a way to call them a witch, but it's only directed at women, at least in this brief telling, right? There's not something that we're suspecting all men of being, where they're like at risk of it or whatever. And like we said earlier, it just seems like Little Red Riding Hood happened to do something early on as a kid that's gonna kind of mark her as safe for the rest of her life, right? Because otherwise, whether or not she's related to this woman, she's also living in the same cabin in the woods that she was, you know?
She shows herself to have agency. Like, I'm taking these oatcakes to grandma, but I'm going to kill a wolf along the way. She's like capable and like she fits in with her environment. She's part of the community. She's one of them.
Well, you could also argue that about the grandmother that was a werewolf. She's living by herself in the woods. She's X, Y, and Z-ing.
We don't see her being competent.
No, not competent. I just mean this girl, she was always going to be this way, right? She's always been competent or whatever, but she just got lucky in the sense that she got to display something very early on against a witch that meant that all of her positive attributes were not going to be suspect otherwise, right?
Oh, yeah. She doesn't have a cat following her around.
Yeah, or just, you know, like, I mean,
Get away, cat!
yeah, wouldn't there be like reason to assume that like a little girl living in the woods by herself has some kind of shit going on that we don't understand? And instead we're
Not
like,
a witch
oh,
dispatcher.
yeah. Instead it's like, well, actually she kills werewolves who are witches and she did it even though it was her relative. So she's one of the good ones.
Yeah.
And she's like, in the meantime, covering up her third nipple, like wherever it is on her body and hoping no one ever sees it. If you had a wart on your hand, though, that was your first mistake. That's
You
pretty
always wear that
obvious.
band-aid.
Yeah, exactly. Come on.
I wanted to mention there's this part, the moment you mentioned before where it switches from kind of like the background stuff to more of like, here's the scene, here's the thing that's going to happen in the story. So they're talking about like what they do with witches and familiars and all this stuff. And like, then they stone her to death. A new paragraph, winter and cold weather. It's not even a sentence, right? It's just like that brutal kind of like, this is the life of these people. And then the next paragraph starts, go and visit grandmother who has been sick. And you don't know it immediately, but you kind of work out that's a somebody talking. It's dialogue. It's not marked as dialogue. But I was thinking about that in terms of a lot of those second person imperative stories we've done, like the How to Become a Writer, the Laurie Moore How To Manual, the mock imperative, go and visit grandmother. It's almost sounds like one of those stories.
I love that style.
Yeah, but this is not done in that way. But I just thought of it as a transition into the scene. You don't need to know as you're reading it that it is dialogue. It still manages in the same way that those stories manage to set up a scene and set up an expectation, develop character, do all the things they do in the second person imperative. You get the same thing with this dialogue that you don't know is dialogue immediately. Go and visit grandmother is a way to say, all right, somebody's gonna go visit their grandmother in this story. Like, let's go with her as she goes to visit grandmother who's been sick. Take her the oatcakes. All right, this character that we don't see yet, but we know is about to appear on stage is gonna be taking her oatcakes. And then the next paragraph starts, the good child does as her mother bids. And that's when you realize that it was dialogue. I was thinking about that in terms of how little we need in like the sentence and the style to really see the scene and to get into the story. Like I said before, a lot of this could be written, like those three or four paragraphs that I read could have been 5 pages. It could have been the whole story if it were written in a different way. But this style is like just that short, brutal kind of like we described it, sentences that don't need a lot more, but it still gets you where you're going. And I don't think she was trying to do anything tricky here, but it's just like as she was writing, she probably came to this like, okay, now I'm going to put in this dialogue. I don't need to tag it because I'm doing this like really minimal kind of short style to this. So the reader will figure it out. It'll be fine. And you can trust that because we are able to do that, because enough information is in there that we don't even need to know it's dialogue right away. I think that that's something we can think about. Maybe this could be a takeaway for me, but that's something we can think about for when we write. Like, we want to think about style. We want to like make sure our style matches what we're doing. Because you get a lot of emotion in style. Like short, brutal sentences is a different emotion than long. long flowery ones, but getting just the right word isn't always exactly what you need. You know, you can get
Right.
the essence of it right into the bones of the sentence.
Yeah, so maybe it's like an argument for like that kind of brevity, but like you said really early on, this tone, this like sparse tone is like in keeping with the overall theme of the story too. Kind of makes you wonder like if this writer is, I'd have to read the rest of the stuff, right? If Angela Carter writes this way in general, like if she has a tendency toward that kind of quick to the point, not all these extra words, or if it's just like she knows how to embody these people.
I thought she was editing a collection of like French folk tales or something, or doing translating or something like that. And so I imagine she's just reading that style for her day job. It was like, I'm gonna play with this.
That happens to me when I read something or if I like watch a movie and I'm like really into it. I just can't help but immediately start essentially plagiarizing or copying. If you've been reading a book like every day for like weeks, you know? Yeah, it's just what's most fresh in your head. I guess what I would take away from it is even though like the beginning just felt like scene setting, I think it was really important and for me like the strongest like visually. And like we've said, it's so quick and to the point, but they cram so much in here that tells you who these people are, what they believe, and how their environment kind of plays into everything. There's a line that says, like, at the end of that first paragraph, it says, harsh, brief, poor lives. That's the sentence. Yeah, I mean, you could end it there because we start saying, like, it's cold here, there's wild beasts in the forest, it's a hard life. I'm literally writing, like, reading this verbatim.
It's funny that you're reading it verbatim, but it sounds like
A
you
list.
are summarizing
I know. Cold, tempest, wild beasts in the forest, it's a hard life. Yeah.
it.
No, this is the story. And you could probably end it right there with that line that I like, harsh, brief, poor lives. But then we go into a little more detail and they sort of explain what specifically this culture believes about witches. And then they introduce the blue-eyed child or whatever. Anyway, I don't love the type of introduction this gives to most stories. I wouldn't suggest it for most types of short stories. Here it really works, you know, for how short the whole piece is and like the feel of like a fairy tale or whatever. We just lay it bare and explain. But there's something to be said for being able to describe your setting and your people this quickly. Maybe it's like a good exercise, or maybe it's just like something to think about if you want to really quickly world build. I just felt like I learned so much and it was so strong visually too. I could just see these people being cast as like, I don't know. I was thinking, like I said, cinematically, I could see these people and I could see the opening of a film and blood on the snow and everyone's dirty and their hair's long and greasy. Like you could just picture all of it. And I don't often have that strong of a visual when I'm reading fiction. So this is good.
Yeah, it's always about those like telling details, the ones that kind of seeds. I always call them like synecdochal. They're, it suggests the larger thing in the small. You can describe one detail that just kind of informs a larger picture.
Right.
The whole thing about their superstition. What are the most important details for this? We want to know that they live a really hard life in a harsh environment. They have this superstition because that's what's going to inform her trek, right? Her
Yeah.
journey and the way she confronts the wolf and her response to her grandmother once she gets there. So, you know, setting those up in the first two paragraphs.
Right. Pretty important.
Yeah. And she does it in a really, I keep coming back to the prose about how brutal it is. You know, it's a brutal prose for a brutal scene. It's really, really well wed.
Job, Angela.
When I first read the story and I was like, what would my takeaway be? It was going to be something about if you want to retell an old story, the thing that we're going to notice about a story like this as we read it is how it's different from the source material.
Oh, sure.
We're going to notice like how she doesn't run away from the wolf. The wolf isn't as it's menacing and it's dangerous, but she's just like, okay, whatever, deal with it. And then Stone Grandma, that's fine. And we notice that. And we notice that she is very different than Little Red Riding Hood in the traditional story. And so that was a thought I had about like when you retell the story, like think about what are you changing about the story? And like that
Right.
is probably what you're going to highlight in your telling is the differences, which is really obvious. But that was just the thought a certain level, it's very obvious. Like, of course, don't just spend all day describing her red hood.
Yeah, but I mean, it is interesting because you do want to first establish that you're using a source material as inspiration. So you do have to like spend a little bit of time explaining that.
In this one, it's like you're going to grandma's house, you're bringing her some stuff, which is the story of Red Riding Hood. And then you meet a wolf along the way. Those are the same beats as that story. So these things are the same, but the distinctions are what she does to the wolf, how she responds. Like she fights
Right.
back. I don't know. In different versions of that story, the wolf like threatens her as not a wolf, but somebody else that she meets who's like the wolf in disguise.
Doesn't he eat her?
He eats grandma, I thought, at the end. I don't know. There's a million versions of the story.
And then the woodsman
Oh,
like
he eats
guts
her when she
her.
gets to the house, and then the
Yeah.
woodsman cuts her out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I meant on the way to grandma's house,
Oh, you're
there's
right.
a.
She was eaten. She was eaten.
On the way to grandma's house is what I'm talking about. I
Yes.
thought she encountered the wolf and some guys prior to arriving. And that's one of the things that's being played with here. But it's not dwelt on. The differences are what's dwelt on, which I just thought it was really interesting that I didn't even recognize it as Red Riding Hood until partway through. And then I was questioning. I was like, is this Red Riding Hood?
Thanks, guys. If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. And for industry news, writing tips, and great short fiction, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/NaplesWritersWorkshop. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.